Hello, everyone. This is the phone conference and general congressional assembly meeting of a community of people that are moving together to, under the label that I have chosen, and everybody seems comfortable with it so far, of the Supreme Court of Law for the United States of America. This is a bold proposition, but we can talk about it later. Anyway, this is the 2nd of October, the 2nd of January, 2021, the first conference of ours of the year here. And we like to follow an agenda, and the opening portion of the agenda is a prayer. And if there's no objections, I'd like to go ahead and open in that manner. True God, Yahweh Jehovah, champion of truth and justice in the universe, please send your angels with your Holy Spirit to touch each and every one of the participants here, to take a hand in their lives, protect us all, one and all, from forces of evil. And help us, please, to be inspired to choose our words carefully and respectfully so that we might build consensus and harmony about how to advance your holy, righteous cause of truth and justice and peace on this earth. For if we're arguing and getting frustrated with each other, peace automatically escapes. And so please help us to keep calm and respectful and thoughtful and righteous in all of our manners in which we speak and talk and attempt to build working relationships with each other. And please guide and direct us and inspire us for solutions to the numerous evils that are facing us on this earth, and help us to develop consensus about what you wish for us to do in response to those evils, because we know you like to work through your devoted followers, your people who have functionality of conscience and empathy on this earth. And in hereunder, and in following the example of your precious son, Jesus Yeshua, 2,000 years ago, in his grand name, we pray these things. Amen. And here under, I've rearranged our conference agenda a little bit. I shortened it. It needs even more shortening. Agenda item 2, is there any new items that anyone wants to add to next week's agenda that we haven't got fit into this week's agenda? Is there anyone with an agenda item for next week's agenda that they'd like to place on the conference invitation here? Hearing none. And I think I see that we've got Michael, or at least Cindy, in the conference. Oh, Michael's here too. Excellent. As I placed Michael's agenda items, right near the top of our conference. Michael had 2 items, the first of which concerns the maybe I should let Michael introduce it. I kind of reworded the exact wording of his proposition there, added more details, and Mr. Nally is also, Michael's building on Mr. Nally's document, so maybe Michael can pass the baton to Paul, and I think we can take more than 5 minutes on this. Michael, would you care to introduce this issue?
Yeah, thank you, Charles. I just wanted to ask how many on the call listening were able to catch Paul Nally on the live streaming broadcast? There were several TV channels that had him. Did anybody see it?
This is David in Michigan. I did. I saw it, and I copied Paul Nally in an email I sent to Charles saying congratulations for the exposure. I yield.
All right. Yeah, he was on several streaming news channels. OAN, I believe, is the one that's probably the most popular, and then NTD, Right Side Broadcasting. But it was really good. And the proposal, I would like to, I guess, let Paul, if he's on right now, just say anything about it, what he would like, and then I could present my proposal after he gives his words on the issue. Paul, are you there?
Thank you. Yes, I am. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, sir.
All right. Basically, what we have done, 44 citizens from around the country have petitioned the grand jury for the Northern District of Georgia to take control and manage a criminal inquiry into the allegations of misconduct in this presidential election cycle. This is a nonpartisan effort. What we are seeking is that if the evidence does show, and we believe, contrary to the opinion of the former United States Attorney Barr, we believe that there is sufficient evidence to warrant not just the inquiry, criminal inquiry, around the nation, but the issuance of presentments and indictments of persons or persons, corporate and natural persons, for violations of federal laws concerning the election process. And we hope to see them indicted to trial, and upon conviction, being sentenced to a term of years away from the social intercourse of peace-loving, freedom-loving American citizens. So that is it in a nutshell. Now, the primary reason for bringing this action is because we have experienced time and again multiple instances of violations of federal criminal statutes, and we have not seen criminal prosecutions that have followed. So we want to put an end to our reliance upon the U.S. Department of Justice and the FBI in bringing these people to before the bar of justice. We will assume our duty as prosecutors in this matter. So with that oversight, I will yield to questions or comments.
Just Chris has an observation. If I might, I think it would be logical and clear as day to presume that there was more than one state experiencing it nearly the same simultaneously moment and time, although throughout different time zones, where a devious plot was executed to stop the counts where they had the Dominion and other machines and systems in play to dramatically alter the vote numbers for the Biden group and to the detriment of the Trump group. Not that I'm for either group or not, although I am certainly anti-criminal elements, as we see clearly evidenced by the Biden group. It certainly seems reasonable that someone was calling the shots. There was a defined playbook that was disseminated through some sort of intercommunications means between the different state factions who all participated simultaneously. And, of course, it was blatant in Georgia, and they had video cameras to document it, and a fake burst pipe to cover it up. These are all things that we want to pay attention to and certainly support that we need to have someone that is actually interested in preserving the rule of law and justice in America, objective justice, that is, as opposed to being conflicted and biased as the private foreign corporation called the Department of Justice and the FBI seem to be completely compromised and perhaps beyond the ability to make a fair and neutral adjudication of what crimes are because of conflicts of interest. With that, thank you.
Thank you, Chris. Michael, did you have further focus about taking Paul's model complaint and trying to encourage others in our group here to do similar actions? I think that was part of your wording and your proposition here.
Yeah, it's a great opportunity for us to use this act, this criminal act, as a way to trigger people to get involved. I believe that it would be very advantageous for us to take Paul's his claim, his and reword it to fit our particular state, and his demand for the investigation of a grand jury. We could apply that to whatever state we want, and that's what we're planning to do in the state of Florida, is to pursue a grand jury inquiry to investigate this crime that has disenfranchised all of the states. Every state would have the right to do this and clearly have proper standing. There's no doubt about it. And I think this would be a great way for us to find other people in the community that feel the same way, that would be willing to put their name on the petition, the federal court in their district, whatever state that may be. We're in the middle district of Florida, but we have three court districts, federal court districts, and we're trying to find people that would want to participate in each of those three districts. And so far, it's been a pretty positive response from the people I've spoken to. And then the second proposal that I made was to start nominating people in our group here on this phone that would be capable of taking on different duties and aspects of organizing our efforts. And by nominating someone, that gives it a better standing, a little better honor, rather than appointing yourself. And I think
yes,
appropriate in following that pattern. It was a pattern that the founders chose as well. So I would yield at this time to any comments, questions on these two proposals.
Okay. Anybody, comments, questions on these two proposals? Well, I could share a little bit. On the first one, I am inclined to believe that the Biden campaign has orchestrated fraud, but I would want to also side with Lewis in this issue in that we need to have specifics. I haven't had the time to get into Paul's complaint in its details. I don't know how much specifics Paul goes into there, but we would need to have evidence solid that is worthy of establishing probable cause to form the belief that the crime has actually been committed. And a key point there is specific individuals need to be named. Maybe we could get at least a brief response from Paul there. Paul, in your complaint to and motion before the grand jury, did you name specific individuals that you believe are guilty of criminal behavior, or did you leave that kind of ambiguous?
No, we did not. And thank you, Charles, for allowing a little further input. We do not name specific individuals. And the reason we don't is because there is no need in taking up that amount of paperwork to request a grand jury investigation. Now, it might be helpful to know that three, as I recall, three of the petitioners on our complaint are in fact witnesses to conduct which they allege was illegal in that voting process. The rest of us are asking the grand jury to conduct its own investigation, which a grand jury has absolute jurisdiction to do. Now, let me also point out that our petition is requesting the Atlanta Division Grand Jury to investigate, to manage, supervise, and investigate allegations from all 50 states. Now that, of course, is a very large order. But what a federal grand jury can do, now, first off, you have to understand that a grand jury anywhere, a federal grand jury anywhere, from Guam to Puerto Rico, can investigate violations of federal criminal statutes wherever they occur. Now, there are other procedures to follow if they start an investigation in a crime committed in the state of Washington, let's say, then whatever they determine in Atlanta, they can either advise a federal grand jury in Washington of what they have found, or they can just go ahead and issue an indictment. But that indictment must be transferred to the district court having in personam jurisdiction of the offender.
Yeah.
Now, because this is such a tall order, another thing that the grand jury can do in Atlanta is they can communicate directly with other grand juries around the country. So if they find that there was a problem in Michigan, they can contact a grand jury, federal grand jury in Michigan, and ask them to focus their attention on what's going on in Michigan. And when they are through with that investigation in Michigan, let the Atlanta grand jury know what they found. And they can do that for all 50 states. If there are citizens in, for example, Arizona, New Mexico, Pennsylvania, who are actually witnesses and use our petition as a boilerplate for filing their own, then they can petition Pennsylvania, a federal grand jury in Pennsylvania, to conduct an investigation in that state and ask the grand jury in Pennsylvania, when they have reached a decision, to forward a copy of their presentment or indictments, well, a copy of a presentment to the Atlanta grand jury, so they will know that that state's taken care of. So if any citizens want to participate in a criminal prosecution of those who have stolen the value of our property, our intangible property, which is our vote, then they are welcome to do so either by joining a petition in their own state, or they can send a letter of support to the Atlanta grand jury supporting our request for the Atlanta grand jury to manage and supervise that criminal investigation. And I'll yield if there are any questions or comments.
This is David in Michigan. I'd like to respond to Paul. Charles is quite aware that, and maybe Lewis is too, but I think to a lesser extent, that I have a case that I have been having to deal with that is taking a long time to kind of come to the surface here on this forum with this assembly. And what I'm doing instead is I'm having to take it to a federal court. And William Barr is one of those that I have evidence against. I am specifically naming names. And I, after hearing your video and seeing your video of the last few days, I was wanting to make contact with you. My situation is not specifically dealing with the election, but my specific situation is dealing with the same actors that are dominating the corruption here in the state of Michigan and at the higher levels going into D.C. and to include William Barr. And I have requested, I've just been working on the paperwork here. I have requested a grand jury, special grand jury under 18 U.S.C. section 3332, I believe it is, or 3331. I think it's 3332. And that, you know, I want access. I am disabled. Anyway, I was wondering if I was send you a copy of all this paperwork, if that would help in any way to deal with the state of Michigan. I yield.
Okay, first off, yes, you're correct in 3332. I assume that you have made that request to a federal prosecutor in your appropriate jurisdiction. If you have, you should realize that the federal prosecutor, upon your written request, does not have any discretion. He must inform the grand jury of your criminal complaint.
Now, I am aware of that quite extensively over the last 12 years or so of my going reporting other crimes to the U.S. Attorney's Office and reciting even back in 2012. 18 U.S.C. 3332, and seeing the abuse of discretion by Barbara McQuaid, and so and I've seen several others before that. So this is a pattern and practice of the office itself, which is the reason why I've taken this to the Washington D.C. level, to the Department of Justice, and it's only layered further and further of the same old stuff. Like I said, it's a pattern and practice. I yield.
Okay, let me ask you a question. Have you sent a letter of complaint or a petition of complaint directly to a grand jury foreman?
Here in Michigan at the state level, they have undermined the grand jury process with the investigative subpoena statute. So there's only two types of grand juries here in Michigan. One is a one-man grand jury, which consists of a judge, believe it or not, and the other is a multi-county grand jury that is convened by the at the state level. And so the short answer to that is no. At the federal level, I have been in the courts. I have been in the federal courts as the plaintiff, so to speak, and in the face of the U.S. Attorney General and FBI and DOJ and all that stuff demanding access, and I have gotten from the Sixth Circuit Court of Appeals, as well as the state level of Michigan Court of Appeals, citizens have, number one, no interest whatsoever, no legal interest in the prosecution or non-prosecution or of another, and they have, number two, no right to access the grand jury. And
okay.
That.
May I interrupt? First off, any court that uses that phrase, oh, bear with me a moment. Any judge who uses that phrase, that a citizen lacks a judicially cognizable interest in the prosecution or non-prosecution of another, and puts it in writing and signs his signature, has committed a federal felony under 18 U.S.C. 242. That comment has been possibly the most abused precedent, alleged precedent, ever by the courts in this nation. And in my state, I don't know about your state, but in my state, it's an abuse. The reason for that is, number one, that comment came out of the case of Linda R.S. versus Richard D., which was a case that arose in Texas. And the question to which that comment applied was, does a citizen have a right to compel a state's prosecutor to criminally prosecute an individual? Every one of us can agree that no, a citizen cannot compel a prosecutor. And the reason they can't is because of a doctrine called prosecutorial discretion. So it is possible to assume that a prosecutor in any given case might find greater social value in exchanging information for a criminal prosecution with an informant. I mean, that just makes common sense. So consequently, that is the reason why that you cannot compel a district attorney to criminally prosecute a case.
Well, if I may, getting more directly to what you said earlier about violation of 18 U.S.C. Section 242, 1041, whatever, is that that is the reason why I took my criminal allegations against the judge, as you just hinted about, to the U.S. Department of Justice and to the Supreme Court. In presenting that type of bad behavior to the Supreme Court, and Again, deaf ears, dead ends, malfeasance, additional criminal activity, proof of domestic terrorism, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, insurrection, whatever you want to call it, it's the same result. And so it's still boils down to my question. My initial question here is, because I have been answering your questions, would my submission to your grand jury for the purposes of, that a sideline, basically, what you're saying, your focus is on the election 2020 and not on, it appears, anything else, but there is one little thread of evidence, two of them, one being the state of Michigan and the other being William Barr, who's no longer in office, that I have evidence against specifically. So yes. I will again ask the question, would this submission be of any assistance to you, or if we were to use this forum of Charles's weekly conference here as a forum, I can put it onto next week's agenda. I yield.
Actually, what you can do is take the look at our petition to the Atlanta grand jury, and you will see the words where we ask them to inquire into violations against this presidential election cycle, and then you will see the phrase, and other criminal matters. So here's what you can do. You can use that petition as a template and draw up your own complaint of other criminal matters, and you can list them if you want to. And then you can mail that directly to the United States grand jury clerk in a sealed envelope and address that envelope. Well, actually, what I'm going to ask you to do is this. Take your petition, put it in an envelope, manila envelope, seal it, address it on the front to the foreman, the United States District Court Grand Jury, Atlanta Division. Put that manila envelope in a little larger envelope and address it to the United States District Court, Northern District of Georgia, Atlanta Division, C/O in care of, clerk of the grand jury. I think her room number, if I recall correctly, is number 600.
Is that the grand jury that you are with?
Yeah, that's the one we have mailed ours to, yes, and that is the procedure we have used. And what we did is on the outside of each envelope, we put a warning sticker. Opening this mail by any other than the addressee is a violation of federal statutes. Now, the reason we put that on there is for the following reason. Number one, the clerk of the grand jury is not the same office as the clerk of the U.S. District Court. There's two separate offices. The clerk of the grand jury in Atlanta, and I'm sure it's that way in your state as well, is a employee of the U.S. Department of Justice or an employee of the Assistant United States Attorney's Office. Now, that way, number one, you're keeping a United States attorney, hopefully keeping them from opening the mail and looking to see what it's about. Now, the reason for that is because there's case law on this that goes back to the 1790s in the case of Henry Quarles and Butler, And there it is specifically stated that your communications with any official concerning violations of criminal laws are privileged communications. In other words, what they're saying is no other officer, be it federal judge, be it United States attorney, be it United States marshal, nobody has any business knowing what your specific business is with a grand jury. And let me say that again, just in case somebody wants to make a note. It's N. Re. Quarles and Butler. So, because our petition carries a broader statement, i.e. other criminal complaints, then yours would be jurisdictionally proper in before the Atlanta grand jury. Now, what might happen to yours is when they realize all of this is happening in Michigan, they may transfer your complaint directly to a federal grand jury in Michigan. Now, do you understand, do you need any clarification on jurisdiction and procedure?
No, I think because I have a tendency, we've got the recording. I took note of the timing here, and I can go back because I have no fingers and no legs. I don't take notes as fast as you talk, and so I'll go back to the recording when it's done. And clearly, there's no assistance there. There's no digital transmission that I can just present this right straight out of my computer. I have to find ways to get to the post office, or first I need to get to some place to buy envelopes. And and the subject matter of my stuff that I'm dealing with right now, it deals with an illegal eviction during a federal moratorium on evictions. And so I've been targeted for a long time, and I don't seem to get any assistance and accommodations and things like that. So I understand the whole process, the whole procedure, and I understand the tediousness that I have to go through in order to do that, because nobody's there to receive my digital transmission with a one click of the button that says the word S-E-N-D, send. And I do thank you for all the information on everything that is difficult for me to do. Thank you, sir.
I understand, and I'm sorry to hear of your situation. But, yes, you do. You need to understand you have an absolute right to go directly to a federal grand jury. And any judge or United States attorney that says you do not have a judicially cognizable interest is violating the 18 U.S.C. 242. Now, that is also, I would ask you to add that complaint against any judge or any United States attorney who has said that, or better yet, who has written it to you in your case. They need to be looked at by a grand jury, federal grand jury. They need to be federally prosecuted, and they need to spend time in a United States facility. Now, keep in mind that when we go to the federal grand jury, I also have similar complaints about the misuse of that phrase from the case of Linda R.S. And that's another thing that you need to know if you don't already, and that is that grand juries have the absolute right to judge the law, whether it's statutory or case law. That is their discretion. I'll yield.
Thank you, Paul. I believe, and David, good interaction. I'm glad that to hear you and Paul discussing the fine points. I would like to put a wrap on the first issue that Michael has raised here, and perhaps hopefully we won't consume another 40 minutes of in discussing the second issue. But Michael has also raised the second issue here about nominations of individuals in our community instead of just claiming it ourselves, nominations of individuals in our local communities that I think Michael focused at the county level here, for assuming offices with some degree of colorable authority. Michael's using words there that don't appear to me to be traditional with the common law, but they have basic merit in just their obvious implications. Michael, would you care to jump in and re-summarize, help us focus on issue number two here?
Yeah, sure I would. Thank you. The verbiage isn't rooted in any kind of common law, mainly because of the technology difference that we have. You know, for example, Intel Scout. You know, we have the internet now that we all can be scouting and finding intelligence. Some are better at it than others. Some are not so good. Others are better at just being general stewards of the land, air, and water, and government. So, you know, these positions of steward, intel scout, investigator, legal, aid, which is something that Paul Malley would fall under, and yourself as well, Charles, which, you know, I nominated you a couple weeks ago to be, our legal aid, our legal expert in this effort. So we need to start considering, officially nominating people to do these different jobs that need to be done. We have a team. We're building some could call it a force, some could call it a team, an army. However you want to put it together, we need certain people to fulfill the various duties. And by nominating them, you lend merit and credibility to the act. Whereas if it were done by self-appointment, it's not the same. Clearly, implicate. So this is how the founders did it. As they began their effort pre-Revolutionary War, they nominated different ones to do different things. And that's what we need to do. We need to get busy about this effort. And I think we really need to start pondering, how we can get this ball rolling. And this is a good start. It's a good way to start. And I like Paul Nally's effort, and I think we could grow it state by state. The evidence, it was mentioned earlier, if we're going to be bringing forth any evidence. There are volumes and volumes of evidence that are being gathered by highly credible professionals, citizens. The list goes on and on and on. That is, a no-brainer there. We could simply point to these sources of evidence that need to be investigated. The cry throughout the land is loud and clear that there is something fishy that occurred on election night. And the results so quickly changed in six states in a matter of hours, in a very parallel fashion, which in itself is highly suspicious. not to mention the fact that he won both Florida and Ohio, which have long been deemed bellwether states. And for the victor, the alleged victor, Biden, to not have carried those is very odd and strange and suspicious and demands accountability, along with the volumes of evidence that has been reported by many, many people in many states. So I'll yield at that, and I hope that we can, you know, start getting some traction here and start nominating different ones to take different positions. A county steward would be a very general, well-rounded position that almost any one of us could fulfill. So I'll leave it at that. Thank you, Charles. I yield.
Thank you, Michael. Comments, questions from anybody? I do have
Lewis of Michigan here.
Lewis, yes, go ahead.
Yeah, I'd like to respond to both of the conversations that have just taken place regarding the position of county steward. You know, something like that, whether it's county steward, community, what's the Republic's got something that they came up with, community, I don't know, growth, or I don't recall the title right now. But I think that is something that's actually handled at if a county assembly wants to put something like that in place. I do see the need. I can definitely see the need, and I think I comprehend, you know, the action that Michael is expecting that, you know, that position to be involved with. I don't think that is up to this body to determine. You could suggest and put it out there. We are very comfortable here on Wayne County with what we have, the model that we've adopted by Charles and what's in place. And we would feel comfortable establishing, you know, any other positions that we believe that would assist our community in growth. And I think that's what Michael was talking about. So that was regarding the second issue. Again, I don't think that is the role of this body here. I think this is the court. And I think that this is just as Charles has named it, if we're going to use this as the Supreme Court of Law for the de jure, then we should keep that role. Not that the Supreme Court of Law can't, for example, hire an investigator for a particular matter. I certainly believe that those things can be done. I don't think that's necessarily an office, but one that comes forward for a particular case. Regarding the first matter of each of the states kind of adopting Paul's and their group there, their petition, I think we had discussed that, and I'm glad that Paul reiterated that on this call, that he and I actually had some discussion about this federal grand jury and looking into here, coming into Michigan and other areas, and he cleared up that that's what the federal grand jury could do. And as such, I think that it's not necessary for each state to bring forth a similar action. I think what he suggested, you know, sign on to what Georgia has done. And if you're looking for that federal grand jury to look into your state's activity included in that letter of support, state that. In terms of election fraud, I'm still waiting to see evidence. Here on Michigan, I haven't seen one shred of evidence, not one. And I'm following these court cases that they have filed, and I believe that there's one win and 59 losses. So as I mentioned a couple of calls back, I support what they're doing in Georgia in terms of the investigation.
Oh, he's got me muted.
You're not muted.
Okay, I said point of order. You're supposed to stop and address the point of order.
I heard you say one point of order just then, and then I heard he's got me muted, and I did stop. That's how I heard your second statement. You've got the floor.
Okay. The fact is, in those cases that you claimed to cite, not one bit of evidence was heard by a judge. Not one bit of evidence has ever been heard by any judge in any of the cases. I yield.
Okay. I did watch the Michigan Senate hearings. Though I didn't watch Pennsylvania's, I didn't watch Florida's or anyone else's, but I did take about 4 hours to watch Michigan's. And what I heard was nothing but allegations, no evidence. So I'm waiting for anyone to bring forward any evidence, because only thing that I'm seeing here is a repeat of the actions that happened 100 years ago or more during the Reconstruction period. They're actually using the same type of language, radical Republicans, with their Reconstruction, which prior to, 1964 was the most inclusive period of time in this country. So they're using the same, and I'm seeing the same, Georgia was the last state then to be admitted into the Union after Reconstruction, readmitted to the Union after Reconstruction, because they had removed all of their black representation in the state the year before. So they were kicked out. They were actually readmitted, kicked out again, and then came back in. And to me, this is a repeat of all of those actions. I'm looking at this, and I'm just shaking my head. I'm looking at this all over what's going on in this country, and I'm like, this is the same thing that happened in 1869. We're going through the same things that they were doing in 1870. Matter of fact, 1865, prior to that, the black codes and those type of things that brought on the first Civil Rights Act. I'm hearing the same language. It's disheartening. But we'll play it out. We'll play it out. And I'm going to follow this through, looking for any evidence. I yield.
Thank you.
If I may.
Bruce, are you saying that, if I might, are you saying that you have not seen any affidavits presented yet? Affidavits should be considered as evidence, I do believe.
Yeah, I have. However, I've also heard those people speak on those affidavits at the Michigan Senate hearing, on a few affidavits that I was able to read.
Yeah.
And believe me, if I was sitting on a jury, I'd bring them up for perjury.
Okay, well,
I bring them up. They're historic, and see, that's the problem, Charles. When one brings forward an affidavit, we are to accept that as fact. But the people here, when it comes to a matter of ethnicity and racism, with these targeted lawsuits in places like Milwaukee, Wisconsin, Wayne County, of course, targeting Detroit here, and others that have some heavily populated black and brown populations. I don't use the word minority, and that heavily Democratic population is a code word. It's nothing but a dog whistle. So let's call it what it is. What I am seeing, and it is my observation, that any time large numbers of black and brown people are voting, the other side, the Republican side, sees that as fraudulent. And they are surprised that, number one, 66% of the population turned out to vote. That was even higher than Barack. That was surprising, number one, for them. And the fact that so many people actually despise that human being, Mr. Trump, that is a shock to some people. And us on the other side are looking like, are you kidding? He's one of the most despicable human beings I've ever had to witness in my life. But that's an opinion. That's simply an opinion. I think that we are wasting our time with that. And when I look to deal with the de facto, I'm looking at the administration and the policies and how will we interact with them. Certainly not to look to keep one or the other in office, although this one here, my belief, and obviously I am not in the majority here on this call, was actually dangerous to the Union. And I think that the day that he got elected, I put a post up on my Facebook, which I wanted to go back and reshare, and was removed. And I said, he's going to preside over the divided states of America. I said that on election night. And I went back because that's what I see right now. And I wanted to repost it, and Facebook had removed the post. But that's where we are. This is certainly, when you've got an action from one state to telling another state, or not telling another state, starting an investigation because of the actions in this state. They didn't do it right over there. Or they didn't do it right over there. And it doesn't matter what name we put there on the state. We're dealing with, and we are existing in, with the divided states of America. I no longer even use the term United States. I simply, like they do across the seas, call us the states. Because there's no united here. So with that, I yield.
Thank you, Lewis. If I might try to summarize just briefly here, I don't mean to belabor the point, but I think technically speaking, you have in your most recent comments here, you've admitted that there are affidavits, and I do believe affidavits are evidence. So I think your previous choice of words was in error in saying that you haven't seen any evidence. It's just that you don't think the evidence is credible. Is that, am I presuming too much there?
No, you're right. I do not think the evidence is credible based upon the testimony of the witnesses and the authors of those affidavits.
Okay, well,
I straight think they're lying.
Oh, right.
And if you lie in the affidavit, I think they need to be brought up on charges.
Well, that would be in a counter complaint.
Dana Nessel, the Attorney General here, has indicated that she will be investigating those that are bringing up these frivolous lawsuits and claims. So they better have some evidence, because I think time.
The smoke and mirrors get so thick in the de factos. I don't like to get distracted with what prosecuting attorneys are indicating that they might do. But I do know the mechanics of due process of law, and if we've got evidence, and I'm glad that you're admitting that technically speaking, yeah, even though you don't think it's credible, there is evidence in support of these claims, and at that point, any court can assume jurisdiction. Justice delayed is justice denied, and any court of general jurisdiction can assume authority over that. All county courts and all precinct courts are courts of general jurisdiction in the USA, and if the proper local geographical county or precinct is not exercising their jurisdiction to hear the merits of the evidence and the counter-complaints, then any other court can do it. And so I had no
problem with that.
Remember,
a couple of weeks back when Paul introduced his to us his suit, I said I support that, and I'm looking for any evidence that they find. And remember, that's when we had the discussion, and he because I wasn't aware that they can reach over here to another state. So we had that conversation. Well, this is a federal grand jury. Ah, okay. So they can take a look at any state. I said, I look forward to any evidence coming out of that grand jury investigation. Because an affidavit, see, unfortunately, Charles, with the history of this country, from me, being a man of color, black man, a white man or any Anglo-American, as you say, an Anglo-American, male or female, especially the female, coming up and making a statement and saying something as factual without any other evidence other than her affidavit, that doesn't sit well with me. You know, Emmett Till was a 14-year-old man, young boy, killed because of a white woman saying, you know, he touched me on the elevator. You've got men that are sitting in jail. You've got a
point of order.
Men of color.
Point of order.
Wait. I need to be able to finish
I have been waiting, and I did ask for, if I may, before you just did a couple of minutes ago and kept on going. So
Charles asked me a question, though, David. Charles asked me a question, and we were continuing the conversation. I then responded to him. In fact, I interjected and asked him if I could while he was still speaking. So we were having a dialogue here. I didn't hear you at any point in time ask for the floor.
Well, that's too bad because you were too busy talking. I think Charles heard me, and I think he wanted to go ahead and make his point on something, and he engaged you in something that was much longer, and I'm just asking for a point of order to say that I just heard you say, if I may, and I've already said, if I may, before you did. That's a point of order.
Charles, your call.
David, I did not hear your first point of order. I didn't hear that. Maybe you were on mute or something.
No, I didn't say point of order. I said if I may.
Okay, well, either way, I didn't hear you ask for the floor, whatever verbiage you said.
Oh,
until.
Okay.
Yes. I'm sure Lewis is near the end of his point here. If we can allow Lewis to finish here, and then you can jump in, please, David.
And I will, just with one statement, the history of this country makes it such as you know, an Anglo-American coming forward with an affidavit. I understand what you're saying regarding the due process of law. I need a little bit more than that. There are too many of my people that have been that are dead because of that, in jail because of that. There was a time in this country where, again, you know, one had to have any man of color had to have an Anglo-American even vouch. We couldn't sit on a jury. We couldn't testify. If I said it's 3 o'clock, no one believed it. I need you to come by and attest to that fact. So because they've in this climate here on Michigan, in this land, which is Michigan is one of the most segregated states in the country, believe it or not. It really, just because it's north means absolutely nothing. It's the Mississippi of the north. So as such, bringing a white woman, which is what, remember, that was Rudy Giuliani's star witness, up here to testify to what she saw take place downtown Detroit was not factual. And with affidavits coming from people like that, it undermines any type of confidence in the judicial system. With that, I yield.
Thank you, Lewis. And I have some thoughts on that. I think we can build on that. You're raising some excellent points, Lewis. But David, please express your concerns.
Well, it appears to me that Lewis is omitting or discarding something that's happened more immediate in Michigan's history with regard to this 2020 election that is just a very brief moment back behind us. And he would rather have us listen to and take as fact all these things that he's showing, talking about, based in 1870s and other periods of time that he was not even alive, much less, I just think that it's a totally unfair comparison for him to be using his statements as argumentative facts. That, for instance, another one, even talking about focusing too much, in my opinion, on a white woman who had an affidavit. I also saw the same 4-hour hearing that he apparently was looking at, and I saw an Indian woman that came up first. You could barely understand her language, but I understood it well enough to know that she wasn't a white woman, speaking perfectly good English. And then there was a couple of more. There was a man and a woman. I think the man had a Hispanic last name, and the woman had she also was from India. These people are immigrants to the country. They were anything but white, and they also had affidavits, and they were making their testimonies too that were concurrent with the so-called white woman that he wants to tie in with the Reconstruction Acts and all this other kind of stuff that's totally unrelated. Except in his mind, and he'll admit that, that you know, that he, I'm just not going to buy as fact what his opinion is, and I yield.
Thank you, Dave.
And if I may respond to that, you can buy whatever you want. The woman, the Indian woman that testified in Michigan, was probably the most racist of the group. That's the woman that said, you can't even understand my name, you can't even say my name, and let's say some chow comes up and wants to vote without ID. And that word chow, she was referencing a Chinese person. She put on display the prejudice from Indians to Chinese and Chinese to Indians. So I focused on the one that I thought was on some type of drugs or intoxicated. I actually, at the time, I was typing into the chat, is this woman drunk? And that was the white woman who had a lot of other issues, who I thought was blatantly lying. I wish they had, if she had taken an oath, I think she'd been in jail for perjury. So, yeah, they've got a bunch of racists. And they are racist. Like I said, Michigan is the Mississippi of the North. And we had people here that were surprised about that. But because I wrestled in high school and was involved in judo and, you know, did AAU and had to travel throughout this state, I was the one always telling people, listen, you leave the tri-state area, you have a problem. This is farm country. And you get in mid-Michigan, you have a problem. So there are, and that's been proven, David. That's been proven. There have been all type of racial incidents here. So nothing, and by the way, Reconstruction, you need to go back and take a look and study that your history. That period of time is very relevant to what's going on right now. Very relevant, specifically with regards to human rights. I yield.
May I?
Cindy?
I yield.
Yes, this is Cindy in Florida, and this subject matter has gone too far. I don't believe for one second that there is any racism on this call, that any of us that are on this call have any prejudices towards any people, no matter what their skin color, and I would really like to change the subject. I yield.
Thank you, Cindy. Lewis, I do think that we've made the basic points here, and that it probably would be good to go ahead and try to move on to other issues on our agenda. Do you have any objection there, Lewis?
No objection on my part.
Okay. I would like to entertain the notion, in light of your gracious admission that technically speaking, yeah, there is evidence upon which a court of general jurisdiction could assume authority to adjudicate this matter, that maybe for our next agenda that we put on an agenda item to review whether or not there is probable cause to form the belief that crimes have been committed as a result of the evidence that's before our court. I would like to point out the technicality of due process, that with regard to any specific act, one act, there needs to be at least two witnesses. Lewis's point about one person that's he questions the credibility of submitting an affidavit, we would need two affidavits addressing the same issue in order to establish probable cause to form the belief that a crime has been committed, unless there's some type of other evidence in support, like a dead body or something. So I think I'll go ahead and put on next week's agenda revisiting the actual merits of the accusation that there's been criminal fraud in this case, and then maybe we can get into the technical point of whether or not we got two affidavits testifying to the same point. With all the testimony that we've heard so far, I would think that would be simple for the people that are supporting Mr. Nally's general proposition here to come up with. And at that point, we could proceed to ask if there's any people that are willing to submit affidavits, like the clerks in charge of the recording booths or something like that, willing to submit affidavits calling the first affiants liars or anything, and maybe they can produce secret videos or whatever. It could unfold, and I think it would be good for us to go ahead. This is obviously an issue with deep roots in our discussion here. It's very timely, and so I'll go ahead and put that on the agenda for next week to take some time to examine the evidence in support of the general complaint that Mr. Nally and others in our conference here are inclined to believe is already been submitted in publicly available testimony and things.
I have a question.
Sure, Lewis.
Okay, on this call next week, are these people who are making these allegations to bring evidence and provide evidence on that call for our review?
Yeah, if Paul and Michael or others want to, Chris, anybody that has specific affidavits, especially if they overlap on the specific issue of instance of voter fraud by particular individuals. Paul said he wasn't naming any individuals. We would need specific individuals. There has to be physical action by named natural people in any type of a criminal complaint. That's an essential element of a criminal prosecution. Under common law definition of crime, you got to have a natural person you accuse. You can't just accuse a legal fiction corporation or something. I believe we could move forward in that manner, Lewis.
Okay. The reason that I asked that question is that, you know, without it, it's a waste of time. So,
yeah.
I mean, it gets into, you know, again, a long discussion and opinions and everything else. So,
yeah. We want to avoid that, just like Cynthia here is appropriately pointing out to us that it can go back and forth forever unless we get down to the nuts and bolts of due process and whether or not we got natural, real people, both as complaining parties and injured parties and accused criminals. We'll put that on next week's agenda then, and unless there's an objection from anybody. Does anybody have an objection? Hearing none. I would like to go on from here to Michael's second point to do a little bit more follow-up on the county officers. I personally would like a delegation of authority from the group for me to assume the office of Justice of the Peace for Precinct 1 of Coleman County, Texas. I don't know too many people around here, and I'm thinking of going down to the county clerk's office and filing a document saying I'm making myself available. I'm claiming the office of Justice of the Peace for Precinct 1 that is presently vacant, and just putting that in the county record. And that's one of the most powerful offices in the county, technically speaking. And but from there under, if it's just me doing it, it's kind of thin. But if I've got a delegation of authority from a few of you saying that you're familiar with me and you do believe I'm competent to follow due process of law to administer justice for the local people of Precinct 1 of Coleman County, Texas, that would probably double my influence in the county clerk's office when I go in there to file my paperwork. And so I harmonious with Michael's second point there, I would like to do that. And I do think also town constables would be extremely important for doing these intel scouts, investigations, and things like that. A real lot of good ideas there and instinct, but I think trying to embrace our common law terminology, where our real constitutional horsepower is at, is a much more empowering manner of proceeding with this general proposition. I should yield there. Comments, questions, especially from Michael? Anybody? I yield. Anybody muted? Hearing none. How's our time holding? I'm sure we've got at least a little bit. We got a little bit of time. We've had a good, healthy discussion so far here.
Excuse me, Paul. I'm sorry, Charles. One moment, Paul. Did you unmute yourself? Were you attempting to? Did you want to add something?
Yeah. Can you hear me?
Yes,
we can hear you now. Go ahead.
Okay. I do have a question for Charles. Now, first off, let me say I am in favor of his proposition. However, I understand from several years ago, having been in the state of Texas for several months, that there is an elective constitutional office of Justice of the Peace. So my question is the current Office of Justice of the Peace vacant in that county? I'll pause.
Sure, Paul. Thank you for focusing more tightly on these important issues. In Texas here, in Coleman County here, they've got what they call countywide justice of the peace. Okay?
Yes.
But a neighboring county, Brown County, has justice of the peace officers for each of their precincts. Both of our counties have four precincts, and in Brown County, they've got a bigger population, and they've got a justice of the peace for each of those four precincts. But over here in Coleman County, we've got quite a bit less population, maybe 20% or so, we've only got one countywide justice of the peace. But probably the larger issue is that what you're referring to there is similar as the way they regulate county judges and county sheriffs. When they prescribe election process and duties for county sheriffs and county judges and justices of the peace and things like that, they're reaching beyond the technicalities of their constitutional mandate. What they're doing is they're granting a municipal franchise that is in fundamental conflict with the common law grassroots system. Does that make sense to you, Paul?
Well, yes. But what concerns me is, would your common law stature that you would be claiming be in a legal conflict with a statutory office which apparently already exists?
I do believe the short answer there is yes, but the conflict by applying true law to the conflict, their municipal franchise is inferior to the grassroots common law self-governing organic process that I would be invoking. And to my mind, I'm quite comfortable raising that precise issue in front of these local de factos, because I've been in there crossing swords with them before in a CPS case. They turn tail and run every time I come in there. I just need a good issue and some support from, you know, people like here that got some type of vote of confidence, showing that there are people that recognize that I know what I'm talking about, at least better than the de factos, at least the equal of the de factos. So I'm prepared for that battle. You're raising good issues, but I frequently criticize a lot of good people here. I don't mean to be too harsh, but I need to be assuming a point on this, because I'm talking about doing bold things all the time, but I'm not doing them myself yet. And if I'm actually doing the kind of bold things that I'm talking about, then maybe that'll kind of help inspire some of the others.